Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the sixth broadcast of Inspiration Live. We're delighted you could join us. And as all of you know, this is a weekly live broadcast from London. And we hope that you can join us, listen to the comments that we have to give, and also ask some live questions. Each Wednesday at 10 o'clock, we'll review the latest and hottest topics that are happening around the infrastructure and energy world. After a quick presentation from my colleagues, we're going to get down to the details of what they have to say. So let me introduce my co-hosts. My name is Marco Dell'Aquila. I'm the chairman and co-founder of Inspiration, and I'm joined by Maritina Canellacopoulou, head of research, and Fernando Moncada Rivera, head of deal flow. So this week, Maritina will kick off and discuss the Spain 1.3 gigawatt solar PV tender that was in the press and hotly debated. And after that, Fernando will pick up a thread from Maritina's discussion last week on hydrogen and discuss the ever busy and incredibly frothy hydrogen IPO space. Maritina, hope you're well. Welcome this week. Talk to us about this new tender. Why is it interesting?
Thank you very much, Marco. Good morning, everyone. So as you mentioned, I would like to draw attention to some interesting developments happening around synergies between coal phase out and clean energy. The story that I will talk about is not so much about the new capacity, which is always great, but I would like to draw attention to the just transition element of the clean energy transition, the other side of decarbonization, the one we don't talk much, but we need to increasingly address. So my story is about Spain's just transition 1.3 gigawatt solar PV tender. And I will be talking about what opportunities emerge following global coal phase-out plans, especially in the subsidy-free renewables area, which is relevant to this case. So in short, the Spanish government announced it will allocate 1.3 gigawatts of renewables in Aragon. It's in northeastern Spain, to replace an almost 1 gigawatt coal-fired power station. Its name is Teruel. It's owned by Endesa, and it was decommissioned last year. When I say 1.3 gigawatts, I mean that it will grant access to the grid to projects of up to 1.3 gigawatts, which is how much the substation in the area can actually take. The projects obviously will replace the lost production by the closure of the coal fire plant, and the allocation will take place through a competitive process, which will assess what just transition criteria the project proposals will incorporate. The story is that actually the Spanish government put out the ministerial draft order up for public consultation, which is expected to close 15th of June.
Maritina, question first technically, and then we can move on to the sort of the tariff and market aspects. Is it a like for like, megawatt for megawatt? Because as we all know, sort of coal is a sort of dispatchable high 80s, 90% availability, whereas solar is, well, even in a good Spanish environment, probably no higher than the high 30%. So is it 1.2 gigawatts of coal that's been shut down, or is it sort of 400-500, which is the equivalent then in gigawatt hours?
No, it's one gigawatt of installed capacity, coal production that was decommissioned. And I don't think the assessment took place on a like-for-like basis. It took place on the basis of how much capacity the substation in the area can take.
Right, very interesting. And you, I suppose one of the innovative aspects is this just transition, which is clearly language that comes from the EU. And as you and I have discussed in the geopolitics podcast, when we discussed the Green New Deal, there is this drive towards huge investments in the green sector, but there's also the desire that as this happens, that the benefits of the transition into renewables don't just benefit certain parts of the economy, but more parts. Talk to us a little more about the breadth of what is a just transition? Why is it interesting or important? And given that our audience are probably mostly investors and practitioners around the space who would be interested in maybe bidding for or supporting developers in the sector, what does it mean for them? How should they interpret it?
All right, I will address each question separately. So first of all, I can give some more details on the competitive process. So just to put some things in perspective, the objective is to facilitate the installation of new renewables that promote economic and social recovery in areas that have been deemed that they may be negatively affected by the energy transition. So for some context, Spain has pledged net zero by 2050, and it has some of the most aggressive coal phase out plans. The country didn't have a major coal dependency. Local coal is about 5% of the country's energy mix, but half of the 10 gigawatts capacity that existed 5 years ago is now decommissioned. It's from 10 gigawatts, it's something like 4.5. The production in gigawatt hours terms is something minimal, 2.5. So just to put some numbers there, the Spanish government is actually a pioneer in making sure that its coal phase-out plans are done in a just transition way. What does it mean? It means that now we do not address just new capacity. We do not just want clean energy. So we don't want just the one element of the sustainability three pillars. Sustainability is social, economic, environment. When you just inject clean energy to the grid, you just look at the environmental factor. But we have left kind of the societal factor kind of behind, and it's increasingly important, especially when we see stranded communities, for example, or industries having a very negative effect on people's living. So the criteria for this allocation of this capacity, some of the criteria that would need to be met are job creation, business development in the local area, vocational training plans, fight against depopulation, because we don't want empty communities. We don't want mines shutting down and coal stations shutting down and cities emptying. Promotion of energy communities. I don't see a fixed requirement. I don't see fixed criteria. It's some ideas. So actually what I'm looking forward to see is how much innovation we will see in how much more a solar power plant can do in the overall area.
So this is really interesting, but of course I have many more questions to ask you. As an economist, I look at the allocation and the economic benefits, and with coal, and if we take away the emissions issues, coal has a significant supply chain, and the actual production of coal requires significant employment. because power stations are essentially very large industrial facilities. And as we all know, solar requires minimal day-to-day maintenance, operations and maintenance. And even during the construction period, often the level of people is very little, and the construction period is very short, as opposed to coal, which actually building a new thermal plant can take 3 years or more. So I'm interested to understand, how does the benefit flow to the community? Because I really don't see how a substitution of coal can immediately benefit the community without there being additional efforts. Because at the end of the day, the solar developer that wins can only hire a contractor who can only have so many people to make it economically viable. And once operational, as we all know, the additional or the marginal cost of maintaining a solar array is actually quite small, especially if it's a large company that runs multiple arrays. So what's, you know, if you were to put a political hat on as a local politician in the area of Aragon, what would you ask for, and to whom would you ask? Would you ask the developer to pay it, or the government to pay? And I understand that a lot of what I'm asking doesn't exist yet and hasn't been clarified, but I'm deliberately asking for you to come up maybe with some creative ideas.
I think your question makes sense. And in order to give you a proper answer, I will need to first give you what is the opportunity cost for project sponsors to get involved. Yes. Because I completely agree with you. It seems like too much effort, and not that was very wrong. It looks like a lot of effort, because my first thought was the same, because I come from a country that is lignite dependent. I've seen the cities. I find it very difficult to say to these people that solar can give you lifetime jobs. So the effort needs to be significant. But let's think of what is the motivation for project sponsors to get involved. So, as I mentioned in the beginning, the tender is about granting access to the Spanish grid. There was some discussion over the past years whether this just transition tenders will be access to the grid or some government structures, fixed price or CFD or floor mechanism. But no, it appears that it's merely access to the grid. So let's put this in perspective. We're talking about Spain, the hottest subsidy-free renewables market in the world. And if we look back at some recent activity and all this development craze and permitting craze, for people to just get access to the Spanish grid. So for example, I read the Electrica had something like 30 gigawatts of permits standing, and we see fees increasing so much. We've heard some crazy prices per megawatt hour. So the opportunity for the sponsor is actually access to the grid. It's not the first time we see that. We have seen that in Portugal. Grid is a valuable asset, and people and governments are monetizing that. So on the one hand, you have access to solar PV subsidy-free in Spain. On the other hand, you would have to be creative about how much you give up. So it remains to be seen how project sponsors will feel and how they will weigh this opportunity. I expect, because it's not clear yet, this is the story that I'm talking about. It's just that the Spanish government put up the proposal up for public consultation. We don't have exact details yet, but I assume that it's not only access to the grid. I assume that there will be more policy incentives, some nice tax relief, probably, so that they incentivize this extra effort from the project sponsor. And just a small note there that in order to get environmental permits and approval from the local communities, renewables have always done an extra effort to give back to the community. So it's not entirely a new concept. It's just that now it will have to be a bit more. And as you said, kind of convince people who are used to working 40 hours per week in the same thing for 30 years to do otherwise, and to show them the benefits. We have seen, I need to also mention something else. In the country, as I said, they have an exemplary policy initiative about this just transition and what happens after coal. And it's impressive how local incumbents, some of the major coal producers in the country, Endesa, Iberdrola, Naturgy, are on board. They want this to happen. So I suspect that there are some nice plans there, because I wouldn't be surprised if the same companies applied for this permit, although this is just speculation. And we have seen that when energy majors want to innovate, they will do it for good. So just to finish up with some overall comments of the initiative, I'm personally very excited about it. I'm always happy to bring up some romance in the clean energy transition, because as I said, I think we are also a bit late in addressing the just transition element. And this comes from a renewables fanatic, but I acknowledge a few shortcomings. Investors so far have been focused on stranded assets, for example, but we haven't really been talking about stranded communities and stranded countries and how we address that. And I actually expect just transition to be a new model. And actually, I think a lot of people will know the energy trilemma, the policy energy trilemma. It's affordability, energy security, and low emissions. I think the societal factor has been missing there. How didn't anyone notice that? I think we actually need to put a four pillar in the energy trilemma. And this is what I see happening. And with the policy being very clear globally about coal phase out, I expect some nice opportunities, not only for investors, for societies overall and countries.
Well, that's an incredibly detailed and specific response. I mean, I would add one thing that if we look at industrial policy from a macro perspective, probably Germany is the best example in Europe of incentives that are driven by industrial logic. And certainly, you know, it's one of the few countries in Europe that's maintained a renewable sector. But in terms of solar only, and in terms of Spain, I just personally find it difficult to see beyond purchasing solar panels at the least cost and some small economic benefit around the installation, what the true benefit of installing and if you like, managing solar assets could be. I mean, certainly it addresses the quadrilemma, as you call it, trilemma plus one, but I don't think it really drives economic benefit. So I kind of agree with you that the economic benefit to local communities and maintaining local communities, stopping people maybe, you know, migrating to Madrid or Barcelona or other parts of Europe, it will be a bigger challenge, and probably a challenge that's beyond the remit of the renewable energy sector.
Don't forget that it's not just the installation. If we see even in infrastructure projects, Hellinikon comes in mind in Athens, a major and contested infrastructure project that it has very clear criteria for investors. If you actually want to go ahead, you need to give back to the community. So it's not just the installation of a project, it's how you give back. This could be giving back revenues from the projects to support local innovation and local businesses and the community. It's not just the panels and the maintenance of the panels. I think if you're a sustainability officer nowadays, it's full of creativity, it's full of ideas, it's an endless. So this, at least this is how I see it, more positively, and I trust that we are smart enough to be creative enough to solve this, because there's as much as you can go if you actually address only one.
I completely agree, and I think there needs to be a regulatory mechanism to allow local communities to benefit directly from the revenues that projects, and it's got to be rather than optional, it's got to be imposed from Madrid, and then each region has to adopt it. I think this is an incredibly interesting, I think we've taken a story that could have just been a generic story about solar, but actually made it a much broader topic about the just transition. So I really appreciate that, Maritina. May I turn to you, Fernando, and ask you about hydrogen? We know it's a hot space. Each week there are more joint ventures announced, more projects being developed. Can you talk to us about the IPO market? Because I think you have two specific case studies you want to discuss with us. And then, of course, we'll debate them, because it carries on the discussion we had last week about hydrogen. And presumably we'll have it next week and the week after, because hydrogen is a sector that continues giving in terms of news and analysis. So, Fernando, over to you, sir.
Thanks, Marco. And yeah, it does. It is the gift that keeps on giving. Actually, but before I do, just to kind of jump in on what was just discussed, I think in addition to, in terms of incentives, in addition to kind of the regulatory actors stepping in, or the equity investors doing it of their own volition, I think that things like this are increasingly being built into the actual financing mechanisms now. You see kind of this debt being linked to ESG factors, and the S in that the social factors is oftentimes related to some kind of community fund that the investor has to demonstrably show that it's giving back to the community in order to get some more wiggle room on their debt pricing there. So I think that's an increasing incentive going forward. But then back to what I was going to speak about today. So the past 2 weeks I've seen a couple of IPOs actually on the horizon in the hydrogen space. The first being Green Hydrogen Systems, which is going to list, which has announced its intention to list on the Copenhagen NASDAQ. And then in France, you have Hydrogène de France, or HDF Energy for short, which is going public, or has rather registered to go public on the Euronext Paris. Now, both are kind of, not too small, but on the smaller side, and they kind of want to tap the public markets for the necessary capital they need to increase their own production, and they're coming against caps on what they can do individually, and obviously we're seeing a tsunami of demand and by extension money coming on the horizon in the hydrogen space, and they want to get ahead of the curve on that, understandably so. Now they're likely to be just two of a growing number of either hydrogen companies or hydrogen subsidiaries of bigger companies that are going to take advantage of the public markets in coming years. Now, both of these companies have kind of very ambitious plans over the next half decade to a decade, and certainly giving them the additional kind of financing scope, as it were, to increase their production, both of, you know, electrolyzers, as well as, you know, in the case of HDF, for example, their actual equity ownership of actual projects in Europe and around the world. This is going to go a very long way.
And do you see this as a kind of beginning, as you call it, tsunami of different transactions? And if so, are they going to be more significant transactions? And second question, if I may, will you, from what you're hearing in the market, are you hearing more IPOs and listings in European market? Because to be honest with you, I hear very little about hydrogen in the listed market in the UK.
Well, not too sure about the UK, but we have seen, you know, for example, a few weeks ago, ThyssenKrupp CEO said that the company was considering a listing either via IPO or a SPAC merger of its own hydrogen business. And remember that, you know, in the EU, the EU is targeting, you know, 6 gigawatts of installed electrolyzer capacity by 2024, ramped up to 40 gigawatts by 2030. And that's already a huge curve. There's plenty there for a lot of actors. The investment required will be anywhere between, I think, 24 and 42 billion, if I'm not getting my figures mistaken. So there's definitely a lot to go around here. And increasingly, the smaller companies that perhaps don't have the balance sheet on their own to pursue them themselves, they're gonna increasingly want to go the public route. And if you look at Green Hydrogen Solutions, for example. They're already teamed up with other big players such as Ørsted and Siemens Gamesa to kind of co-locate electrolyzers across their pipeline. And the IPO money that they're going to get from this is going to go to things like R&D to scale up production capacity, which they're already ramping up as we speak to kind of address their existing backlog. And then HDF, likewise, you know, they have plans to have 200 megawatts of their, what they call their high power plants, essentially turning hydrogen into you know, electricity that they can then dispatch to the grid or via PPAs and such. They wanna get 200 megawatts by 2025 and 1 gigawatt by 2030. And they are not by any means, I don't think, aberrations in this case. I mean, we already see, we already have a lot of examples. So in North America, you have Ballard and Plug Power, which are more on the fuel cell side. But then we have other companies also are active in hydrogen, even if they're not exclusively in it. So Lind, Bloom Energy, Fuel Cell Energy, they're all doing quite well in the listed space. And we're likely to just see more of it. I mean, France's McPhee Energy recently kind of chose its site in Belfort in France to kind of install its gigafactory for gigawatt scale electrolyzers. And even if you go outside of the public space, you're seeing more kind of larger companies that have the balance sheet, like Cummins, for example, recently teamed up with Iberdrola in Spain to build their own, to enhance the hydrogen value chain there and build their own gigawatt scale electrolyzer factory in Castilla-La Mancha. So it's not at all difficult to see a lot of European players kind of going the public route.
Can I ask you a question? If we draw parallels between this and the PV market that was dominated initially with a lot of German technology and some American technologies, I remember Q-cells, et cetera. And then, you know, the technology effectively was transitioned over to China. China was capable of building gigafactories. Maybe they didn't develop new technologies, but they certainly ramped those technologies up and delivered economies of scale. Do you see the same thing happening? Because based on what you're saying, it sounds like Europe and the US are actually building the gigafactories to compete with or against maybe a transition over to lower cost production in China. And maybe talking a little about geopolitics, do you think that some of the desire to build gigafactories in Europe and the US is a response to maybe the slightly chilling or cooling relationships between, mostly US, but maybe even Europe and China? A lot of questions there, but I, you know, choose which one you want to answer.
Well, yeah, like you said, I mean, China was a big kind of turning point, for better or worse, in the solar market. I mean, it did bring down the cost across the board, then, you know, but by extension, that also kind of sunk a few of the solar cell developers. I mean, the famous example in the US, you know, during the Obama administration was Solyndra, which then got, became a household name to kind of hit him politically with. Perhaps in the hydrogen space, in addition to kind of wanting to keep those kind of national competences in country, wherever that is around Europe, you also have the issue of having a European kind of value chain and wanting those manufacturing capabilities to be at least a bit closer in proximity to where they're going to be deployed. So, I mean, if you look at HDF, for example, it's already in talks with the gas TSOs around Europe that are developing the hydrogen backbone, and it wants to kind of integrate itself into that. And, you know, to the extent that having its own capabilities be outsourced somewhere very far away, maybe it wouldn't be beneficial to it going forward. And frankly, with the new capital that it's going for, it might not be necessary in the long run.
But as my econ professor said many years ago, in a rather condescending tone, because I wasn't doing very well in the class at the time, it's the economics, dear boy. So how would you respond to inevitably China, and not exclusively China, there are other Asian markets, can achieve economies of scale that we just can't achieve? And this is maybe more of a political question. Maritina, feel free to come in, because, you know, we were discussing this last week too.
Yes, it's a never-ending discussion, but some observations on top of my head is that, yes, for years, countries have been outsourcing materials based on their trade partners' competitive advantage. This is international trade 101. It makes sense. Germany gave up on solar PVs because at the time there was no value to compete with China, and it was okay. But I do see a change of tide. And in my head, I believe that it is because nowadays decarbonization and net zero becomes a national policy. This is not about the environment. This is about a new movement, a new entity. It's not about just one thing. So I think that nowadays governments are trying to make the most out of this value for their countries, because when we were trying to achieve the 2020 targets with some gigawatts of installed capacity, okay, people were saying, okay, yeah, let's do 20% renewables in the grid. At the time, I don't think anyone even imagined that this 20% would actually go to 100, that then countries would pledge to net zero. So this became something more. This became a holistic, systemic approach, policy approach. And I think if we are to, because we see it in offshore wind in the UK, nowadays there's more and more conversation about local supply chain. This is nothing against international trade. I hope it's not. It's all about creating more national value. So I think we will see that increasingly. And I hope there's no tension, because no matter how much I have disagreed with political, you know, figures that have been advocating in the wrong way for local production against China, you have to admit that there is a bit of truth there. No matter the narrative was extremely wrong, the message was wrong, but supporting local communities and keeping the value of your decarbonization plan locally, it makes economic sense long term. So I hope this will, you know, satisfy your economic.
Absolutely. And given that we only have a few minutes rather than 3 hours, maybe that's probably good time to put that to one side. Marithina, Fernando, we have some questions from the audience, and I wanted just to ask them, and feel free both to respond. So the first one relates to Spain. Is Spain planning more of these tenders? Is this a trial balloon? Is there policy behind it? From what you've said, it sounds like this is the beginning of a trend, but maybe give us a little more flesh on the bone.
We know that there will be more of this. Now it's the first one that they have announced, given more details under this just transition umbrella. We know that there will be more. We don't know exactly how much, but we know at least five areas in Spain that are in danger of negatively being affected by closure of minings and coal plants. We have some numbers as well. As I said, the country used to have 10 gigawatts of coal capacity. Now it's down to 4.5, and there's a complete phase out plan by 2030, and some say that it will be even before, because this is not about policy anymore, this is about economics. Coal plants are uneconomical, and actually this is why all these coal producers are on board with this transition. In numbers, I would expect at least 10 gigawatts over the next years. And also, since it's a new initiative, there will be improvements and learnings over the future. So this is why personally I view it as a new business model. And the sooner we aim to understand this, the better.
Thank you very much. Fernando, from your perspective as head of deal flow, you talk to the market every day. Is this model unique to Spain? Have you heard it being maybe discussed in other markets? And if you haven't, do you think that it should be applied? Is this a good case study to apply to other markets?
I think it is a very good case study to try to apply. The model itself is not widespread outside of Spain, but I think anywhere where there's a coal plant, there will be opportunity to put something else. And we've seen that repeatedly. I mean, staying in Iberia, for example, Endesa just recently put forward its own proposal, a $582 million, I think, proposal to replace a Portuguese coal plant with, I think, 650 megawatts of solar, along with 100 megawatt battery and 1500 megawatts of electrolysis capacity, or rather 1500 megawatts of hydrogen production. And then if you go over to other markets like Germany, for example, you have the Hamburg Hydrogen Hub, which is basically they've taken one of Vattenfall's old coal plants in the port of Hamburg. And now Vattenfall's teamed up with Shell and Mitsubishi and Warm Hamburg to convert that into a 100 megawatt electrolyzer, which it's then hooking up to what I think they're calling the Hamburg Hydrogen. I don't know if they use the word pipeline, or I'll double check what the word is, but then that kind of makes it, into the first step in a larger value chain, which to your point earlier about, solar power being, easily installed and not really having a lot of kind of, elaborate running costs, the more elaborate you get with these things, the more that kind of plays into it. So, even when it's not, a top-down kind of policy, it could just manifests itself organically, depending on the kind of new asset that goes into replacing the old coal assets. So I think it's definitely something that's scalable geographically across Europe. I too hope that there's that kind of political will to kind of, vocalize that as an actual policy aim rather than just an outcome.
Very interesting.
I can add that despite the fact that we haven't seen, what was special about Spain is that it put just transition in the title, 1.3 gigawatts just transition tender. We see other initiatives, as Fernando mentioned, privately led. And actually, I can also share an example from Greece. Last year, the country announced their e-mobility plan, and it was the first time that I saw the mention of incentives, financial incentives for manufacturing facilities, because the aim is to not just to have EVs in the road, be part of the supply chain. So there were special incentives for businesses that set up in regions that will be negatively affected by the lignite phase-out plan. And Greeks know very well what these regions are and how challenging it will be from a human perspective, a humanitarian perspective. And I was really happy to see this element in the e-mobility plan.
Well, thank you very much. I'm just very, very conscious that, we're running up to our deadline. What I like to do is ask our audience, if you want to ask a question and you haven't had a chance to ask it because our answers are so long-winded, and for that I apologize, I would say send us an email and we'll address it next week. And just to remind everyone, you can actually ask questions live. We can turn your microphone on, we can turn your camera on, you can be seen by all our audience. So you have that option if you want to. If you have a longer comment for us, if you disagree, send us an email to Inspiratia and we will debate and discuss it next week. I would like to thank our speakers this week. And just before we say goodbye, I just want to remind you all that there are a number of events going on in Inspiratia's calendar. So we have 2 weeks to run, exactly 2 weeks, until we have an event called Spotlight on Italian Renewables in conjunction with Oric and Foresight. This is a virtual event that will take place on the 16th of June, which is a Wednesday, in the afternoon. If you're interested, please click onto our website and you can see all the details. And then I'd like to remind everyone that later in the year, fingers crossed and every other part of my body crossed, as we transition back to office and back to sort of mixing, Inspiratia is planning 3 real face-to-face conferences. The first is our regular NEI, New Energy Infrastructure and Energy Storage, which will be on the 30th of September. We then have very exciting subsidy-free and offshore wind, which will be in conjunction with awards. And I think you'll be seeing more from our team on that in the next couple of weeks. And our events calendar is drawn to a close on the 23rd and 24th November with the Hydrogen Decade. So the most exciting, probably new trend for the last 18 months. So plenty to discuss. If you're interested in these events, if you'd like to speak, you'd like to participate, please contact our teams. So thank you, Maritina. Thank you, Fernando. Thank you to all our listeners. And we look forward to seeing you next Wednesday at the same time, 10 a.m. BST. Have a great week and see you next week. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Mike.
Thank you.